Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key.
Log out all together. I'm gonna try to use the host PIN to get back in.
I'm sorry, but I did not hear you press at least 4 digits of your PIN number.
The PIN you entered does not match the PIN you have on file for your account. Please re-enter your PIN.
The host is good, yo. You try to just call into the show. I'm going to try to fix the board.
Okay, let me try it.
You also try to fix the board and you're in, too. Just call into
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Okay, it's 424-222-2525. Okay, let's try this.
The board's not showing me shit.
Okay.
The board is shit. If I have it, there's no show.
Wow. I hope people can hear this. Let's see. Showing me the number, but it won't let me. Okay, here. Let's see what we get.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold, and you will be able to listen to the show.
There have been occasions, especially the
You are now in the host queue.
When they really ask only. One. So the key to success on the bar exam is to manage your time, and you do that by moving from a recognition that this is the contract question to isolating which of the 6 issues of contract law they are raising for your discussion. What are those 6 issues? Well, I warn you in advance that they are simple, and I have rather designed them to be that way. As you look at the fact pattern of a bar exam question, I want you to ask and answer these questions. Did the parties form an agreement? Did the parties form an agreement? Second, if the parties formed an agreement, is their agreement a contract? Is their agreement a contract? The third question, now again look to the fact pattern. Do the terms of that contract or the subsequent actions of either of the parties who formed it confer any rights or impose any duties upon non-traders? Do the terms of the contract or the subsequent conduct of the parties who formed it confer any rights or impose any duties upon non-traders? Fourth, once you have determined all of the persons who may have rights or duties, ask this. Have the performance obligations created by the contract matured? Have the performance obligations created by the contract matured? Fifth, if the contract obligations have matured, has performance been excused? Has performance been excused? Sixth and finally, if performance has not been excused, and in the fact pattern it has not been tendered, you are in the presence of breach, and it's time to discuss the law of remedies. Now, even as you jot those major issues down, much of the material should begin to organize itself and to fall into place in your mind. Let me preview how we will use these 6 inquiries to organize all the material on the law of contract that you would want to know for a bar exam. The first issue, did the parties form an agreement? Here we will be looking briefly at the most familiar part of a contracts course, the law of offer and acceptance. There can be no true contract unless the actions and words of the traders manifest a mutual, objective assent to be bound by the terms of an agreement. We'll also use issue number one to review the material on the impact of ambiguity of language or mistake of the traders as potentially precluding the formation of an agreement. Issue number two, if you have concluded that the traders formed an agreement, is their bargain a contract? Private parties form private agreements, but a contract is a legal status. And whether it has come into existence depends upon two elements. The presence of valuable consideration, bargained for legal detriment on both sides of the exchange, and the absence of defenses which would preclude formation, the so-called real defenses. Again, for convenience, we will use issue number two to organize the material on defenses to enforcement, personal defenses, which render the obligation of one of the parties voidable. We'll also look at the substitute for valuable consideration, promissory estoppel. The third of the potential issues. If you have concluded that the traders formed an agreement, and you just qualified that agreement as having the legal status of a contractual relationship, ask this. Do the terms of that contract or the subsequent conduct of either of the parties who formed it confer any rights or impose any duties upon non-traders? Here we deal with the material on third-party beneficiaries, persons whose rights are defined by the very terms of the original contract. And we also will examine the status of assignees of rights and delegates of duties. These are persons who enter the picture subsequent to the formation of the contract in consequence of an action taken by one of the parties who had formed it. So, who are the non-traders? They are intended beneficiaries, assignees of rights, and delegates of duties. Issue number four. Once you have ascertained all of the persons, traders and non-traders if any, who may have rights or duties on this contract, you must now determine whether the obligations which they created by their exchange of promises have become present duties of performance at peril of breach. In other words, have the contract obligations matured? Now, this question brings us to the need to fix a time and order for performance of the obligations which were merely promised at the stage of forming the agreement. To do it, you will use the law of conditions. Conditions are divided into classifications which relate to their origin. So classified, we will speak of conditions which are expressed, meaning that they were created by the very terms used by the traders in forming the bargain. But there are also conditions which are implied in fact. Though unspoken of by the traders, they arise by necessary physical inference from what the parties obviously assumed. Conditions implied in fact. And the third class of conditions, conditions implied at law, the so-called constructive conditions. They will function as the last gasp measure to fix the time and order of performance if the parties have not settled the matter using express conditions. Constructive conditions, they arise by operation of law. Conditions are also classified according to their impact upon a state of present liability. As I will be insisting tomorrow, every condition modifies a promise. There is no such thing as a condition in the abstract. And with respect to the modified promise, the condition does one of three things. It either inserts a contingency which must be satisfied before liability on the modified promise will become absolute. That is the impact of a true condition precedent. Or it has inserted a contingency which must be satisfied simultaneously with maturing liability on the modified covenant or promise. And that is called, we have conditions precedent a moment ago, that is the condition concurrent. It is a contingency which must be satisfied simultaneously with maturing liability on the modified promise. And finally, but very rarely, there are what are known as conditions subsequent. These are always expressed, never implied. What they do is insert a contingency, the happening of which will discharge and extinguish what up until that moment had been a present liability to perform the promise. So we will look at conditions expressed, conditions implied in fact, conditions constructed, implied at law. And with respect to those conditions, we will type them for their impact on the promises they modify as precedent, concurrent, or subsequent. The fifth issue, once you have used the law of conditions to fix a time and order for performance, check the facts to determine whether the traders have performed in that order and on time. If there has been no performance, pause to consider the possibility that the performance obligations created by the contract have been excused. Excused. Excusable non-performance can arise in any of three classical fact patterns. First, where the performance obligations have become objectively impossible, meaning that no one on the face of the earth could carry out that contract performance. Objective impossibility. Second, where the performance obligations have become commercially impracticable, meaning that performance cannot be accomplished except by an expenditure of funds grossly disproportionate to what the parties had assumed at the formation stage, commercial impracticability. And finally, the third doctrine of excusable non-performance, frustration of purpose. Here the contention will not be that performance is physically impossible or even commercially ruinous. Rather, the party seeking excuse will present the following, that subsequent to the formation of the contract, circumstances have so dramatically altered that the performance of the other party no longer has any value or utility to me. I now seek to be excused from performing my own contract duty, claiming frustration of purpose. The three doctrines of excusable non-performance. The sixth and last issue. If the performance obligations created by the contract have indeed matured and they have not been excused, and factually they have not been performed, you are in the presence of breach. Now, my friends, breach is the dramatic high point of the law of contracts, if not the entire PMBR experience. We will review those phenomena most foul, present material breach, breach by anticipatory repudiation, and if it can be mentioned in polite society, breach by voluntary disablement. Such a grave discussion sets the stage for the material on remedies, damages, the benefit of your bargain as approximated by a sum of money. Restitution and reimbursement, those backward-looking remedies that at least aim to put the aggrieved party at the point that she had before the promise was ever given. And finally, if the aggrieved party cannot recover a loss of bargain recovery, then there is no adequate remedy at law to make him whole for the material breach of a contract. Such an aggrieved party has standing to sue in equity, seeking such relief as declaratory judgments, specific performance decrees, or injunctive assistance. Well, my friends, that is literally all there is to a course on contracts. and I have been with you for 16 minutes. From this point on, I will be stretching. If you found nothing new in that brief capsule look, then you could spend the next three sessions at a different and infinitely more pleasant type of bar. But before you go, a brief preliminary on the Uniform Commercial Code. As everyone in this room is aware, Article 2, the sales article, has been incorporated within the contract materials on both the objective and essay portions of the California bar exam. In order to counter this, the reference volume, the outline, is literally and liberally laced with UCC materials. The approach taken in the outline, amplified in these discussions, is always to compare and contrast the common law position with the reform, almost invariably a simplification brought about by the Uniform Commercial Code. Now, with respect to the code, you have to be aware of when to apply it. It is totally subject matter sensitive. If the subject of the bargain or attempted bargain is the sale of goods, then on the California bar examination, your answer must reflect your knowledge of what the examiners refer to as code principles. Recently, someone asked me if for the California bar examination, you had to know code section.
Hey, Greg.
Yo.
What are you going to do right after? So you're going to go right. You're going to go right in.
Well, you can go ahead on and do the. If you want to do an intro or put a blast, I'll go ahead and put it out. And then don't forget the simulcast on the man mind on the man mindset. But it's not extending beyond that. I just want to make sure the people on that side can pull it. But no, I'm just going to go ahead and cover these couple of topics and get out of here today. Unless people extend the show, because this is a gimme, bro. This is thousands of dollars of information on a gimme.
Not, brother, I feel you. You need to put together a webinar. You know what I'm saying? To really, you know, dig in on this. And I start prepping that now.
Okay, no problem.
I start prepping that now. So if you want, let's go ahead and look at doing a show for up until what, 6:30, which would be 8:30 your time. I'm sorry, 9:30 your time.
I can get here at 9:30. That's cool. Maybe
okay.
Even earlier.
Anytime you're ready to take a break, we can take a break. You know, that way you can break away real quick and we can get right back to it.
No doubt.
So just let me know whenever you want to do that too.
Okay, no problem.
All right, brother. We'll make this happen within an hour, hour and a half, and we'll get out of here.
No doubt. Appreciate it, bro.
All right. And no problem, brother. Peace.
Dramatic provisions of the code to change the common law. Now, under the Uniform Commercial Code, a merchant is a very straightforward idea. He is any person who makes a livelihood dealing in the subject matter or who makes affirmative representations, though they not be true, that is how he makes a livelihood. So a merchant is a professional. Now, here's the point. If I were to offer to sell you this watch, as I will be doing ad nauseum for the next several hours, Article 2 applies to discipline any attempted contract formation between us because the watch is a good. Incidentally, it's not a bad watch. But I don't make my livelihood with this subject matter. You are presumably equally a stranger to the watch trader industry. So we are not merchant traders. The code would apply, but very few of the dramatic provisions of the code would govern the fact pattern. So watch the subject matter and the status of the parties. Now, they rarely get tricky on the bar about non-merchant traders. Rarely. The facts almost invariably permit you to deduce that the parties are professionals or are representing that that's what they are. But simply approach the examination with this type of rule that unless from this point on I indicate a broader focus, right? I am presupposing every time I mention the Uniform Commercial Code that goods are the subject matter and we have a merchant on both sides of the exchange. That is also the rule for reading the outline. If a broader application of the code provision so that it would apply to non-merchants is intended, you will be specifically told that in the outline and I will specifically indicate it in the course of these remarks. Well, so much for preliminaries.
Every day. Can everybody hear me? Hear me all right in here? There we go. Hey, what's up, everybody? High Frequency Radio is presenting, as our producer just said. This is Child Support Thursday. I am your host, Greg Doss. And for the next hour or so, what I'm going to do is answer some questions, touch on a couple of topics, and, of course, if anybody wants to call or comment on anything or needs a question answered, you can call us at 424-222-5250, and we can go ahead and jump right on your question. Now, listen, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law or give legal advice. I, as any of you can and should, study law and tell people, you know, what I've learned, how I've gathered the information. Now, I don't give any information as advice to apply to a specific case, but as general information regarding the law, which, by the way, belongs to the people. Now, listen, use this information for educational purposes only. However, keep in mind that you should gain no education that you don't hope to use in the future, or at least want to be fortified to use in the future. Again, the calling number for the show is 424-222-5250, 424-222-5250. Now, we're going to hop right on off in here. Now, we talked about contracts, and everybody's saying, well, what do you mean about the contract? Well, contracts are important relative to child support because something, as you heard, has to bind the two of you together. Because, see, that contract is that agreement that would essentially bind the parties to perform some function. Now, what's really interesting about that is, if, in fact, particular terms and conditions of a contract are not available, then you can't make the argument that the terms exist and you don't have a breach of contract. You have the non-existence of a contract, and thus you don't have much of anything at all. Now, this is what I want to do. Anybody who wants to call, make sure you press the number 1. And, of course, we're being simulcast, and we appreciate everybody at the Man Mindset. You can call the 347-838-8420 over there and press the number 1, because I do see people in that queue. If you want to say something or have a question, press 1 so that we can identify you and get to your question. Now, the first thing I'm going to talk about, and this probably shocked a whole bunch of you all when you saw it, because I'm going to post this every time, because sometimes you get into situations with child support that you think are criminal when, in fact, they're not. And let's not forget either, and I want to make sure I say this, that this is the public side of things. You can never mix the private with the public, so let's make sure we stay on point and focused. A great and wonderful book that gives insight into the world of the criminal justice system, a few case studies, as well as insight, is Muhammad Ibn Bashir Esquire's Raw Law. For about $6 Kindle, $13 hardcover, you can get a resource that is worth millions, potentially, of course. But all, you know, information for what it's worth is almost priceless, so always keep that in mind. And again,
And also, if you want to contact me, which many of you all have, and I appreciate it, and I must thank the wonderful group of people who are on High Frequency Radio for bringing me in. You can go to gregdoss.com, and you can see the list of services that are provided at gregdoss.com. My contact information, which is not a secret, is on the contact page. I'll give you the information right now. You can contact me at 813-397-9350. Again, that number is 813-397-9350. Hopefully, if you wish for some consultation time that goes beyond 15 minutes, please respect the consultation price, and we can go in and go with it from there. But for the most part, most questions we can pretty much get answered within a few minutes, hopefully. And, of course, you can call me also at 1-800-980-0497, and we can go ahead and discuss your situation. Now, the first line of business today for most of you guys, especially in the state of Florida, and actually I'm looking over it and seeing that these punitive father registries are present in many states in the United States, you want to ask yourself, are you the father? What do you mean, am I the father? Are you the father? What would be the definition of father? Within the lawful term of the definition of father. Now, what I'll tell everybody to do in the state of Florida, and you, we all know how we feel about statutes never override the Constitution. Of course, the Constitution pulls it down. But I'm going to stick inside the chat room for everybody in the chat room, and hey, shout out to all of the people in the chat room, the ones who are known, the ones who are unknown. Thank you for joining us. But right there, you can hit that link, and you can follow along with me so that you will know that I am not making this up. And by the way, for those of you who don't know me, I'm going to give you this information. The ones who know me know I'm not lying. I'm not that creative, people. I can't draw. I don't sing. I can't, you know, play any instruments, or I don't write music and do spoken words. I can dance a little bit, and I can catch a football. So I know what my strengths are, and I know where I'm a little weak. One thing I can do is read. And I want everybody to turn your attention to the Punitive Father Registry, and it's actually in the state of Florida, 63.054, actions required by an unmarried biological father to establish parental rights. And here you go. In order to preserve the right to notice and consent to an adoption under this chapter, an unmarried biological father must, as the registrant, file a notarized claim of paternity form with the Florida Punitive Father Registry, maintained at the Office of Vital Statistics and Department of Health, which includes confirmation of his willingness and intent to support the child for whom paternity is claimed in accordance with state law. You know, sometimes we don't have to really read into a whole bunch of things. Some things are just right there. Don't look further into it, and let's not ever try to confuse and mix morality with what's lawful either, because then you'll find yourself really moving away from all things rational and logical. Now, the claim of paternity may be filed at any time before the child's birth, but may not be filed after the date a petition is filed for termination of parental rights. Pretty interesting. So if you put in a petition to terminate your parental rights, which you don't have any really, when you're unmarried, it's a done deal. Now, in each proceeding for termination of parental rights, the petitioner must submit to the Office of Vital Statistics a copy of the petition for termination of parental rights or a document executed by the clerk of the court showing the style of the case, the name of the persons whose rights are sought to be terminated, and the date and time of the filing of the petition. Now, the Office of Vital Statistics may not record a claim of paternity after the date a petition for termination of parental rights is filed. Now, is that not interesting? Again, and this is for the state of Florida, and I'm certain that in most states there is something that is correlative. Again, the Office of Vital Statistics may not record a claim of paternity after the date a petition for termination of parental rights is filed. Now, let's not forget that. Can you have any rights that you don't acknowledge? Yeah. But can they make you enter into a contract against your will lawfully? No. So be careful with this terminology, people. Now, the failure of an unmarried biological father to file a claim of paternity with the registry before the date of petition for termination of parental rights is filed also bars him from filing a paternity claim under Chapter 742. Again, and I'm just not creative, people. The failure of an unmarried biological father to file a claim of paternity with the registry before the date of a petition for termination of parental rights is filed also bars him from filing a paternity claim under Chapter 742, and we'll get into that at some other time. Now, they have A, that says an unmarried biological father is excepted from the time limitations for filing a claim of paternity with the registry or for filing a paternity claim under Chapter 742, and that, is, again, applies to 742, if the mother identifies him to the adoption entity as a potential biological father by the date she executed consent for adoption, and he is served with a notice of intended adoption plan pursuant to 63062, and the 30-day mandatory response date is later than the date the petition for termination of parental rights is filed with the court. Now, there are several other things, and actually everybody in the state of Florida needs to read that, and we can break them down, but from where we are now, it would probably take another 35 or 40 minutes just to get through there. Now, one reason I wanted the people to understand that, and I know that we have plenty of female callers in Queens. We love you all as well. However, there's a reality of things. And within the reality, sometimes there is a duality of things. What you think is the law or the rule doesn't have anything to do with what is the law and rule. So for many of the guys out there who said, you know, they made me do this or made me do that, you might want to make sure you know that you are the father. And by the way, let's get into this thing about DNA. DNA does not show paternity. It could not possibly do that. All DNA does, or a DNA test does, is identifies a genetic correlation between the two tested subjects. And again, I'm not here to speak to the issue of morality at all. I'm speaking specifically to issues relative to the law. Now, in saying that, I wanted to go to something, and you all, in your own state constitution, just type in, open up another window and follow along with me, and I'm going to go Florida Constitution. And you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? I'm going to tell you. Within the Florida Constitution, Article 1, Section 27, by the way, and I'm going to read it from verbatim, it states that marriage defined, inasmuch as marriage is the legal union of only one man and one woman as husband and wife, no other legal union that is treated as marriage or the substantial equivalent thereof shall be valid or recognized. So that whole wifey thing, no, won't work. The whole boyfriend-girlfriend thing, in the eyes of the law, doesn't work. Any other baby mom, baby daddy thing does not work. Guys, get your crowns out. And ladies, you can take notes of this or stick your fingers in your ear. In the state of Florida, they bring most child support cases under Chapter 12. And that's the Florida, that's a family law rule, the rules of family law. Now, based on what we've just learned, if you are not a family, could they bring an action against you lawfully and correctly utilizing that chapter? Now, I know that there's a hushed silence, and many guys are probably saying, damn, that's interesting. Now, or you're scrambling to go find out under what chapter they brought the action against you. 424-222-5250. Think about that. Why are you paying child support? And again, taking care of your child and child support are two totally different things. Now, I'm going to get into something else in a moment. But the are you sure issue is where are you sure you're actually you even have a claim to that child? Now, if you do, you do. If you don't, you don't. Once it's been established that you have a claim, then you have a different set of rights. And I hope everybody's following me. See, once the child is known to have parents, then at that point, each parent has equal access to the child. And guys, if you really want a lot more in-depth information, Q, did you say we were going to be trying to set up something for people anytime soon? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it'd be good for us to be able to go into detail about some of these remedies and the procedures that can be taken to go ahead and actually have these remedies materialized. So I think we'll be looking at, Doss, is for us to go ahead and, you know, get what you said, maybe schedule a webinar if we have, you know, the audience for it to go ahead and get into some more detail.
And no doubt. And they can also email us if they're interested, so they can show interest by giving email or sending an email either to gregdoss@gregdoss.com, or they can contact, what's the email for High Frequency Radio, Q?
That email is highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. They can email there as well, and either the secretary or Yusuf directly will be filling that.
And there you go, people. But if you need a remedy, whether it's that or in many other areas, please, please, please let us know. That's what we're here to do, and we will set it up and go with it. I'm going to play another clip because I think I did it. I'm not certain if I did it last week or not, but I want you all to pay really close attention to what I'm about to play for you. And from the PMBR. And for those of you who've shown interest in that, I guess you can contact me and I'll find a way to get the information over to you or get these same audios. Once an attorney or a potential attorney, finishes law school, many of them go to seminars so they can kind of get prepped for the bar exam. What you're hearing is the lecture series from that bar exam. So the information that you're hearing is not just from some guy who's a very articulate cat from off the street, but they're professors who actually conduct the seminars. So you're getting firsthand information that you can always go verify by going to your local law library or I won't say not to use Google or what have you, but, you know, go to your local law library or your library and go to Westlaw, and you can check and validate the information and see if it's been updated or if anything's been overturned. But I'm going to cover this issue called strict scrutiny, which really gives the state a very high threshold that they must meet before they can interfere in the private affairs of any individual. Again, this is called strict scrutiny.
Let's start out with strict scrutiny. Strict scrutiny applies to the following areas. It applies to protected First Amendment rights, protected First Amendment rights. It applies to suspect classes. And there are three suspect classes. I'll give you a mnemonic for them. The word is RAN, R-A-N. R stands for race. A stands for alienage, and please put an asterisk by alienage because it's not always suspect. We'll get to that in a little bit. And the N stands for national origin. So strict scrutiny applies to suspect classes, race, alienage with an asterisk, national origin. Strict scrutiny also applies to your fundamental rights, which we just discussed. To vote, right to travel, right to privacy. And under right to privacy, the mnemonic CAMPER. contraception, abortion, marriage, procreation, private education, family relations. So that is strict scrutiny subject matter. Make sure you memorize it and understand that strict scrutiny applies only to those areas. Now, how do you determine if a class is suspect? A class is suspect if it is, number one, determined by characteristics which are unalterable. Determined by characteristics which are unalterable. And number two, there must be a history of purposely unequal treatment. Characteristics unalterable and a history of purposely unequal treatment. Now, under strict scrutiny, the burden of production under strict scrutiny is on the state to show that the law is necessary to achieve a compelling state interest. Necessary to a compelling state interest. The key element in this test is the word necessary. In order for a law to be necessary, that means that there is no less restrictive alternative means available. Because if there is an alternative means available, then that law is not necessary. So this is a very difficult test for the state to pass. It is very hard for the state to show that the law is necessary to a compelling interest. In other words, there's no other way for the state to accomplish it other than by passing this law.
I don't know about the rest of you all.
Unmuted.
I don't know about the rest of you all, but there's not a whole lot that you have to read into that. Now, you may want to get some foundational information, and there's plenty of case law to support that argument, but or to support if you want to make that argument. But the reality of things is that the state does have a tremendous standard. And let me say this before I go forward. Presentation and delivery is very important, people, and maybe I overestimated or underestimated how important it is, but I want to see people get remedied. And I've been through most of the things that I talk about here. Otherwise, I won't. I'll let you know or preface and add the caveat whether or not my position is based on theory. But no different than what we, the great people at High Frequency Radio allowed us to do in bringing in the court session, as well as the people at the Man Mindset, is we've shown proof. But presentation, delivery, what to expect, and all, and adequately preparing yourself for dealing with your day or encounter within the venue is ultimately very important. So I want you to keep that in mind. But there's to the issue of strict scrutiny. There's in most instances the state would never be able to satisfy their compelling interest because you'll find out in most instances it's not the state who's bringing the issue or the case against you. And, in fact, the one who's bringing the claim against you probably lacks standing. So, with that being said, calling number for the show is, again, 424-222-5250. Press the number 1 if you have a question. I know I saw a couple people pop in with questions and they kind of went out. But the only question that's a dumb question is the one that you don't ask. Now, the reason I played strict scrutiny is for a number of reasons, and I'm about to read a holding from case law, and just bear with me as I pull it up. And it's the Prince versus Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and a lot of people are probably more familiar with Troxell versus Granville, even though the Troxell versus Granville was about grandparents. The Prince holding is one of the oldest holdings in U.S. history relative to parental rights or family rights, and it's stated here, and this is the Supreme Court, it's 321 U.S. 158, 1944, when they held that it is cardinal with us that the custody, care, and nurture of the child reside first in the parents, whose primary function and freedom include preparation for obligations the state can neither supply nor hinder. and it is in recognition of this that these decisions have respected the private realm of family life, which the state cannot enter. Now, we're not going to get into what they do, because they do plenty of things. What's most important is what did they have the lawful right to do. And again, we're speaking on in matters public. And by the way, when people, or when you think about, say, oh, well, what about this, this, and this, never forget that public and private do not mix. 424-222-5250. And I'm sure that many of you probably feel that you're in some sort of lecture or some sort of classroom setting, but maybe that's what's necessary for us to achieve remedy when we have issues within these venues. And by the way, I spent some time as an instructor, so I can't help it. And hopefully we're not boring anybody to death, and if we are, then I'm sure you'll get over that too. Area code 202-271, what's your name, where you calling from? Welcome to High Frequency Radio's Child Support Thursday with your host, Greg Doss.
How you doing today, brother?
What's going on?
Not much. My name is Ishmael. I call from the D.C. area.
What's going on?
Not much. I have a question for you about a case that I'm going through. I've gotten child support to basically say that they don't have jurisdiction. But at the time the case started, I wasn't as...
You were what? Say that again, sir?
The case started in 2006. I didn't know what I know now. So they started the case in 2006. Now they're saying that they don't have the jurisdiction to modify or to do anything with this case, or they have jurisdiction to continue to enforce the order. So at this point in time, I'm looking like I'm kind of stuck. Do you have any remedy for that?
Okay, you gave me the statement. Your question is, do I have a remedy for which issue, that you're stuck or that there's a jurisdiction challenge?
Am I stuck?
Well, I believe the stuck part is relative to how do you feel. Do you feel that you're stuck?
No, I don't.
Okay, there we go. Then you're not stuck.
Okay.
Now, as to what your potential remedies could be or how to go about addressing them, and again, I'm not an attorney, so I don't practice or give legal advice. If you want legal advice, you can seek an attorney and be advised. With that being said, if the issue is brought to you, and I can't go into too much detail, but if you want me to go into detail and maybe even possibly try to direct you in a certain way, you can get some consultation by going to gregdoss.com. And, of course, our man Q, who's playing those great beats in the background, has said that he's willing to help set up so we can get as many people in a seminar, a webinar, so that people can come in and hopefully get remedy. But what I would state is this. If at the time you went into that agreement, if in fact you went into the agreement, they came to you with unclean hands and gave an allusion to something that wasn't true, then that would have been an action based upon fraud, correct?
Yes.
Doesn't fraud vitiate even the most solemn contract?
You know, it does. And the thing about my
I broke a little bit on there, Ismail. Try it again.
I said, I don't have any contract. I don't have no birth certificate, no nothing.
Okay. So I think you actually answered your own question.
You gave out a number earlier. Can you give the number?
Oh, area code 813-397-9350, but you can go to gregdoss.com. And you'll see that one as well as 1-800-980-0497 and, of course, 888-DJ-SQUID. And for those of you on the other side who are part of the simulcast with the Man Mindset, you know that my squid is spelled S-Q-W-Y-D.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm getting a bad connection. Can you the website again is Greg, D-R-E-G, dot, what is it?
No, Greg Doss, the same way as the host on the information for high frequency, Greg Doss,
okay.
GREGDOSS.com.
Okay, and 397, what is the last four?
9350.
right. Well, thank you so much for the information, sir.
Oh, anytime. I appreciate it. And we're going to challenge you here a little bit, and because anything that's easy is never appreciated. We want to think. We want to learn to tailor our thinking and to remain focused like a laser beam. Area code 813-532. What's your name? Where you calling from? Welcome to the Greg Dawg Show on High Frequency Radio. This is High Frequency Child Support Thursday.
Peace to the gods.
Peace to the gods. What's going on?
All right. My name is Mike. I'm calling from Brandon, Florida.
Okay. What's going on, Mike?
I heard that you said that you were an instructor, and I wanted to know, would you be holding any classes in the Tampa area anytime soon?
I believe somebody could actually answer that question if they pop in and hit that number. I do hold and instruct every Saturday. And you know what I find so very interesting, because I appreciate the people on High Frequency Radio, Yusef, Jonah, and, of course, Q, for giving me this opportunity. I'm noticing, Q, people from my area that call High Frequency Radio, and probably were surprised to know that I've been in the Tampa area doing this for some time. But, yeah, that's phenomenal. I've been trying this for a while. And but, yes, every Saturday and Sunday – for the last year or so, I've been trying to conduct seminars to help people. But what will happen is I will be available on Saturday for conducting of a seminar. So if you can, and, you know, they're modest. It's really more of an informative or informational kind of seminar. And then if you need any of the services of Greg Dawg's Document Preparation and Self-Help Service, we can get those for you as well. But I have some other people that are kind of working on things, because I actually love the idea of teaching and hopefully disseminating information to help people get a remedy and to gain a greater understanding of the law and your rights. But again, I would direct you to gregdawg.com and just shoot me an email. I've become better at checking the emails, and we can definitely set something up, Mike.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that very much. And, man, you're doing a great job, man, all the way down from Yusuf L. all the way down to everybody. And I want to say thanks. Y'all opened my eyes up to what's really going on. And peace to the gods, man. I will be in touch.
All right. Peace to the gods. What's going on, Q?
You know what? I want to say, for everybody, look, we're going to put a webinar together to get some of these public remedies to make these things available for those of us that may not be going into the public or private venue and are confident on that side. Because the private side is definitely something that you got to be confident about. So we're going to make the public remedies available through Greg Dawg. This is the reason why we brought them into the High Frequency Network family. So look, just look out. If you're not, Mike, and I'm telling this to everybody, if you're not following us, you need to follow us on Blog Talk. You need to become part of the email list. Go ahead and email us highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. You want to put in the subject bar, become email list member, and the secretary or Yusuf directly will get you on the list. You want to follow us on that side as well as the email, as well as follow us on Blog Talk.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Okay.
And let me tell y'all something. This guy that you just heard, Q, who tends to sit in the background, I can't tell you how honored and humbled I am to have been brought in here. And for so many people who only recently have begun speaking to me and telling me about how they feel about my performance here or what I'm doing here, hey, it's not me. It's the guys like Q, Yusuf, Jonah, my man Khalifa, who have inspired me to do this. And I have to give original credit to my man Steve the Dean Williams over at the Man Mindset, because when he heard me on somebody else's Blog Talk Show, Q, about 7 years ago, just having a conversation, he contacted me, much like you did, and said, you ever thought about doing this? And despite the fact that, I've spoken in front of audiences before, I guess as a teacher, a smaller audience, and I played ball, I've been in the military, I was actually a union steward, and I kind of was a little bit apprehensive about trying it, but he gave me a form, allowed me to do what I do, and, my information level has grown. He never tried to put handcuffs or restraints on me, and it's allowed me to do this. And I actually feel very impassioned about helping people because based upon what I've experienced, not what I'm trying to say I observed, what I've experienced, one of the greatest albatrosses that exists for many, many brothers out here, Q, is this child support thing. Because child support,
it can be a huge obstacle, and it can really be frightening. And I know a lot of times as men, we don't want to be frightened, and we don't ever want to comment of something that can frighten us. But this could be a very big mountain if we don't know how to attack it effectively. So, look, if you got more questions, we're going to be hitting a hard break right now. But if you have more questions after the break, we want to hear from you so that way we can go ahead and start to tailor-cut remedies, webinars, assistances in your areas, or maybe just through technology to assist the different areas and tackle some of these different obstacles so we can all overcome together. Obviously, it's about you being responsible, taking care of your family and your children, but at the same time, the state and the government can just be overbroad. They can use their reach and reach into your pockets, and that can destroy your livelihood. So we're about to hit a hard break right now. Greg, you ready for it? And we'll come back.
No doubt.
I'm ready. I'm here. Get before you drill. As you know, most of our scholars are just pests. They get speeches, they write books, they make a lot of money, they do nothing for the hood. Nothing. In fact, one of the biggest problems we have in our black community is scholar pimps. Academic celebrities who we worship. You bring in for lectures and all they do is talk. They're not involved in no organization. They're not involved in no struggle.
Yeah. They stripped us of a language that it wasn't distinguished. We created Ebonic, channel from hate and anguish. But I speak in proper English, that's cause my lips are bigger. My language needs emotion, I guess I'm just your. So I'd rather speak in slang, so we can get for survival. They ask why we joining gangs, we feel it close to tribal. I am my brother's keeper, one aim, one God, one nation. And I come to my brother's aid, I don't need no explanation. And I truly mean that for life, that's with no exploration. My word is fine, you hear? I don't need no declaration. To the back of the bus, that's where they made us sick. And we run to the back of the bus, they just reverse that. We used to hang from trees, now we hang on the block. From the hate inside our veins, we extorted from cops. And they hide these black cops, so we forced to hate our own. Gotta draw the line somewhere, it's how we change. I'm on that walking story, square kids, the senior noble, Jim Ali. Bobby Steele, L. Hodge, let me get the bad, can we be? You know we want, who leads, you know we need, who leads. We got to have, who leads, it's damn right. Come on, I'm on that walking story, square kids, the senior noble, Jim Ali. Bobby Steele, L. Hodge, let me get the bad, can we be? You know we want, who leads, you know we need. We got to have food here, damn bright. Listen, we don't own no pain to report drugs, but they blame it on us. We don't own no land to grow it on, still they pin it on us. Are we just pawns in the game? I speak the truth, that don't mean I'm bitter. I tell them go and live your life and stop putting up fake on Twitter. We live life through Instagram. Take the picture, let them all look. Say you moved on, broke up with your man, and he found all about it on Facebook. That's no emotion, no feeling. Tell me how the hell we still dealing. All digital, non-physical, all mystical, non-realistical. What's reality, what's myth? Living like it's all a script. Lies every time you move your lips. Lies when you try to prove your wrist. Thing get you killed and leave you broke. Michael Jackson, all overdose. Whitney Houston overdose. Billie Holiday overdose. They make more money off you and death. Be quick, go ahead, take your last breath. The label will kill you and cover it up. You steal your funds and tell us none left. That's the price for fame. Do you really want to get in this game? Do you really want to wear those chains? Do you really want to feel that pain? I'm on that market for these red hands. The singer knows who I lead. Bobby Steele, L. Hodge, let me get bad. Can we be? You know we want two leaders. You know we need two leaders. We got to have two leaders. She got fake nails, fake hair, fake smile, fake friends, but you go hear me if you ever try to call her a fake chick. Genuine love is extinct. You just want to sip on the best drink. No worries, speaking blubber. Drive a taxi that's so scary. Pop the pills, living on the edge, living for the thrills, messing with their heads. We living in a war zone. Bullet wounds, shell shock, shrapnel pieces in our flesh, emotionless, the pale cop. Speak my mind like Pimp C. Pressure to let the game pimp me. No sir, no ma'am. With a shotgun, yeah, here I stand. Number small, but we find a lot. Politicians come around the block, take pictures to say they here. Never come back to say they there. We ain't fools, even though most of them went to school. We ain't dumb, Elijah Boone never went to school. Take a look, what did he become? A true leader, like the Panthers with two leaders. Strapped up, ammo full and we strapped up. Come around here, get capped up, we need true leaders. I'm on that market, so we spread hands to singers, no one to our league. Bobby Steele, L. Hodge, let me get the bad, can we be? You know we want two leaders, you know we need two leaders. We got to have two leaders, yeah, right. Come on. I'm on that market, so we spread hands to singers, no one to our league. Bobby Steele, L. Hodge, let me get the bad.
One, yay.
Yeah. I'll listen to Kyle's report Thursday here on the Greg Dodd Show Live. Everyone, tune in tomorrow. Open Forum Friday. Open Forum Friday tomorrow. My rules of the game here on High Frequency Radio Network. Founder and host, Mr. Ben. Greg, you want to go to Triple Six?
Yeah, well, what I think I want to do is, because it's a very important clip, and I know, you know, I don't want to become the host of all the clips, but because the information is so valuable and sometimes it's always good to hear it, unfortunately, sometimes people tend to feel more comfortable hearing information from other sources. So, yeah, I want to go ahead and put this in here, and the issue at this time will be standing. And actually, I can't find it. Did you find it?
Yeah, I got it right here.
Okay.
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to this. I think this will get some good information on our way out tonight. So, yeah, I think we should definitely go to this real quick. All right, y'all, this is standing. Check it out.
Okay. Let's move on now and take a look at our next doctrine, and this one is the most important. And I say most important because it's most highly tested. It's tested not only in the multi-state but on the essays. And this is the doctrine of standing. Now, for essay purposes, your first issue is standing. Whenever you have a plaintiff in federal court, that is the key, that is the trigger. Whenever there is a plaintiff in federal court, your first issue to discuss is going to be standing. Does this plaintiff have a right to bring suit in this court? So make sure you mark that down, put a big asterisk by it, because the standard bar exam essay is not even going to mention the word standing. The examiners are not going to invite you to talk about it, but if you fail to do it, you will probably fail the essay. So standing is the first issue. Now, the plaintiff's goal to assert standing is that she must show a concrete personal stake in the outcome. Concrete personal stake in the outcome. So that's the first thing you want to tell the examiners. Now, to establish such a concrete personal stake, the plaintiff has to satisfy one and sometimes two different doctrines. The first doctrine is called the constitutional standard. This constitutional standard is imposed by the case and controversy requirement that we just referred to a few minutes ago under Article 3, Section 2. Constitutional standard must be satisfied, number one. The second doctrine, which we will get to a little bit later, is called the doctrine of prudential limitations. So standing derives from these two sources, constitutional standard and prudential limitations. Let's go into the constitutional standard first. It has two requirements. Number one, the plaintiff must show injury in fact. The court is pretty liberal here. It's usually fairly easy to establish injury in fact. And most of the time, the injury is going to be economic. It's going to be in the pocketbook, some type of economic injury. But the court has said, in the case of Sierra Club v. Morton, that the injury in fact doesn't have to be economic. It can also be aesthetic injury or environmental injury. That the injury must arise from the governmental conduct being complained of. So injury, in fact, is our first element. The second element of this constitutional standard is called causation. Now, what causation means in this context is that the relief sought must eliminate the harm alleged. The relief being sought must eliminate the harm alleged. Once you understand this concept, a nice one-word synonym for it is redressability. The plaintiff's harm must be redressable. Now, the court is not that liberal here. This is a little bit tougher to satisfy. And just to give you an example of a case where there was no causation, no redressability, in our facts, the plaintiffs were low-income members of the minority who were suing the city, claiming that a zoning ordinance was racially discriminatory. So low-income minority plaintiffs were suing the city, claiming that its racially exclusionary zoning ordinance was denying them affordable housing. Writing for the majority, Justice Powell said these plaintiffs had no standing because even if the zoning ordinance in question was overturned, the housing in question would still not be affordable. Even if the ordinance was overturned, the housing would still not be affordable. There was no substantial likelihood these plaintiffs could achieve their goal. The relief sought would not eliminate the harm alleged. So that was the case of Worth v. Selden. The issue here, remember, is that the plaintiffs have to show causation or redressability. It's a little bit harder to show than the injury in fact. Okay, well, that is it for the constitutional standard. Those are the two elements, injury in fact and causation. Now, on most essays, you're done at this point. You don't have to go any further. And for most multi-state questions, that's about all you have to know. However, let's look at prudential limitations. These are limitations imposed by the court itself in its prudential wisdom. Even where the constitutional standard has been satisfied, there are certain instances where the court will still deny standing, basically in two areas. The first one deals with third-party standing. General rule is that the courts will not hear cases dealing with third-party standing. And the second area is where you have an abstract or generalized grievance. All right, let's turn to third-party standing first. As a general rule, the plaintiff may only advance his or her own constitutional rights. Now, this rule, which says basically no third-party standing, is like so many other rules that you learn in law school. You've been through this enough times by now to know sometimes you have a rule that says no standing, and then all the exceptions go the other way and swallow the rule. Well, this is one of those situations. General rule, no third-party standing. The exception is where the plaintiff can satisfy two requirements. First, the plaintiff has to show a close relationship or nexus exists between that plaintiff's rights and the third party's rights. And the second element is that the plaintiff has to show a special need to adjudicate. Now, let me give you an example from case law that you may be familiar with, and then we'll see how this works. We're going to use the Oklahoma case of Craig v. Bourne as an example. This was one of the early middle-tier scrutiny cases where we had gender discrimination. There was a state law that allowed females to drink beer at age 18. Males had to be 21 in order to drink beer. So there was a gender discrimination here. It was gender discrimination. Females could drink at 18. Men had to be 21 to enjoy the same privilege. Who was the plaintiff? The plaintiff was the bartender. He was attempting to raise the rights of the minor males who couldn't adequately protect their own interests. So there was a special need to adjudicate. The third-party minor males couldn't protect their own interests. Also, bartenders throughout the state were losing a lot of potential revenue, so there was also a financial need to adjudicate. The court said there was also a close enough relationship or nexus between the plaintiff and the third party. The injury suffered by the plaintiff adversely affected his relationship with the third parties. So we had both the elements satisfied. Close relationship existed, special need to adjudicate. So third party standing was conferred. So we now know that a bartender may raise the rights of customers. To give you some other examples here, a doctor may raise the rights of her patient regarding having an abortion. Doctor may raise the rights of a patient. School may protect its minor students, school raising the rights of students. Another example, a labor union or association may challenge layoffs of its workers, raising claims of its members, claims of its workers. So those are all situations where third-party standing has been allowed. Let's turn to the second area of prudential limitations, which is abstract or generalized grievances. And here we're looking primarily at citizen standing. Citizen standing is generally denied. Let me give you an example. There was a federal statute which required the director of the CIA to issue an annual accounting of all public funds used by the CIA. And the CIA director failed to issue this accounting. So Mr. Richardson, a private citizen, decided to bring an action challenging the lack of action by the CIA director. And what the court said was that as a private citizen, there was no standing because the plaintiff had not alleged any mismanagement. He hadn't suffered any injury. There was no harm alleged. And based on that, standing was denied. This was an abstract or generalized grievance. On the multi-state, if you see something like this, if you see an organization dedicated to keeping the federal government within its powers, and this organization is now bringing suit, first thing you want to think of is standing. This would be an example of an abstract or generalized grievance. There's got to be injury in fact suffered, and in this example that I gave you, there was no injury, no mismanagement, no harm alleged. Okay, the next and final area that we're going to be looking at under standing deals with taxpayer standing. Let's turn to state taxpayers first. State taxpayers do have standing to challenge measurable expenditures. Measurable expenditures. An example would be a state taxpayer challenging busing of children to parochial school. The busing itself is a measurable expenditure. The converse is also true. If the measure is other than financial, then no standing. Payer was bringing suit to challenge Bible reading in public school. That is not a financial expenditure, and therefore standing would be denied. The flip side is federal taxpayer standing, and this is one of our easier rules. Federal taxpayers have no standing. Why? Because their interest is too remote. Federal taxpayer, no standing. Now, there is one exception, and many of you probably know the exception better than you know the rule itself. The exception is the case of Flast v. Cohen. Under Flast, a federal taxpayer does have standing, number one, to make an Establishment Clause challenge, number two, to an expenditure enacted under the taxing and spending power. Federal taxpayer has standing, number one, to make an Establishment Clause challenge, number two, to an expenditure enacted under the taxing and spending power. Most recent example from the multi-state went something like this. Congress authorized a gift of federal property in the form of a military cargo airplane. And it told the Secretary of Interior that he could award this airplane to any deserving group. The Secretary was approached first by a group of young boys called the Future Flyers of America. They were interested in studying aviation, hoping that maybe someday one of them would become a pilot. And the Secretary was just about to award the airplane to them when a second group, a religious group, approached him. And this religious group said, "We're undertaking an international crusade for world peace, and we would really like to have this airplane to help us fly over the world and teach our religious teachings throughout the world." What happened? The Secretary gave the plane to the religious group, and the question said, who has standing to challenge his action? Choice A said a state taxpayer. Choice B said a federal taxpayer. Choice C said the future flyers of America, the young boys. Most students went with B, federal taxpayer, thinking flat v. Cohen, because certainly we could argue there was an Establishment Clause violation based on excessive entanglement with religion. But the trick here, under what power was this airplane awarded? If you think back to the first sentence of my hypo, I said this was a gift of federal property. This was the federal property power under which the plane was being awarded. This was not the taxing and spending power. So FLAST did not work under these facts. Correct answer was C, the future flyers of America would have standing. So don't overuse FLAST v. Cohen. It is a very narrow holding. Okay, well, that finishes standing. We've spent some time on it. It's important. But let me just take a quick summary of it to make sure that you understand the highlights. Plaintiff must establish a concrete personal stake in the outcome. To do so, she must satisfy the constitutional standard by showing, number one, injury in fact, number two, causation. Under the doctrine of prudential limitations, there is generally no third-party standing unless plaintiff can show close relationship and special need. Also, no standing for abstract or generalized grievances, no citizen standing. As far as taxpayer standing, state taxpayers have standing for measurable expenditures, no standing if it's other than financial. Federal taxpayers, no standing except FLAST v. Cohen.
Unmuted.
And there we have it, folks. Hey, listen, we have about 4 minutes left on the live on the screen. So if anybody wants to call in who's listening, you can call in at area code 424-222-5250. Those of you who are still listening in on the Man Mindset, if you want to call in, you might want to call in if you have a question. 424-222-5250. And or if you're already in the queue over at the Man Mindset, press the number one and I'll come to you. So there you go. The question of standing is paramount, as you found out. So to our second set, and I see you, Bro Perfect, the issue, the last question I was, or the last set of questions is, who do you owe and where's the proof? When it comes to child support, now who do you owe? Who have you been paying? And where is the proof of that obligation?
That's a good question, because I think that they'll say that you owe the state.
Now, that's pretty interesting.
I think that's what they would say. Now, I could be wrong, but I think that the state is then taking the husbandry role away from you, actually. But they're taking that role and saying that the state has stepped in to be the custodial responsibilities for you to pay to them, I think.
Well, it's interesting, and I can only speak for the state of Florida because, I mean, I know that I dealt with this in the state of Florida. The question becomes, well, how can the state take a priority over the regular individual? And again, we're going back to the notion of the public.
Right. And so I think that's where it all stems from, right, is the state believes, as well as the government believes, that we are enslaved to them.
Like you're subject to them. But if you go into the preamble of the Constitution of the United States, which states quite clearly that we, the people of the United States, by the way, in order to form that more perfect union, establish justice, and ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, and we don't forget, we the people now promote that general welfare, and we the people secure the blessings of liberty, not only to ourselves, but to our posterity, which is future generations.
My argument would be is that I believe that they're talking about the private people and not the public people when it talks of those particular rights that are endowed in the Constitution.
And
so they protect private rights.
know, here's what's interesting. If you look at the word public, what is the definition of public? I would tell everybody to type in the United States Constitution and go to Article 4, Clause 4. Don't take my and people, please don't take my word for it. Don't sit there idly trying to glean your information from what you hear. And Q, I don't know if Yusuf was here. Let me ask you a question, Q. Do you find that you learn so much more when you can actually feel the pages, or is it just me? Do I have that problem?
You know, that's yes. There's something to be, there's something tangible about a book. I can agree with you there.
And also in reading versus listening, people, in as much as we say, okay, because what happens when you listen, you find yourself mimicking. And I've had several conversations with people, and they say, well, I know I heard this and I heard that. I said, you heard, but how much did you read? How much do you know? Now, Article 4, Clause 4, y'all may call it Section 4, that I alluded to previously, states that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. Drop that little, yeah, it's a teeny bit. Again.
So for some reason, every time we go into record mode, this happens, and I always don't catch it, and I got to get better at that. I apologize.
Oh, okay, it's no problem. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government. You say Republican, I thought it was a Democrat. Don't start that foolishness with me, people. Say the pledge. And if you pledge allegiance to that flag, and we're on the public of the United States of America, you'll pledge it to the what? Republic for which it stands, not democracy. One nation under God, we can't argue the private side of the governmental ordinance department, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. Thus, if there's a Republican form of government, then that means that everything, if you look at the base word in Republican, it is public. Re goes back to, that means every state has a government, it goes back to the people. Now, and I want us to go way over, because I think that would probably get into something that we should probably do probably a little bit more in detail within a webinar. But what's interesting about that is that when you go into the preamble, it all comes back together. And it states even the preamble of Florida, and I'm sure everybody there in whatever state you're in can pull this up and you will read something similar to this in your state, because don't forget, the state's chartered to the greater government so that they can be inclusive. And with being inclusive, they had to follow certain rules. Because, see, like here in the state of Florida, it says that we, the people, and don't forget public is people, of the state of Florida, being grateful to the Almighty God for our constitutional liberty. Interesting, liberty, freedom from restraint, remember? In order to secure its benefits, the benefits of liberty, of course, perfect whose government? Our government. Ensure domestic tranquility, maintain public order, and guarantee equal civil, interesting word, and political rights to all, do ordain and establish this Constitution. And one thing you're going to find is that once you are fully private, you're just using the constitutions as the guarantee for those rights. Not just using, you can actually amplify the power of the Constitution. But it's written right there. Now, interestingly enough, in Florida, without even reading, I know that Article 1, Section 1 of that very same Florida Constitution is real clear when it states that all political power is inherent in the people. Okay, that, people? And the enunciation herein of certain rights shall not be construed
to deny or even impair others retained by the people. So the question to the state says, well, that's one issue, but what's even more interesting is if you go to the United States Constitution and say, well, what is Amendment 9 all about then? I thought the ninth is the enumeration of the rights should not be construed to deny or despair others retained by the people, right? So if you claim it as yours, then it can be yours. If you don't claim it as yours, then it's not yours. And again, we're speaking publicly. Now, let's not forget that the 10th Amendment, which is a piggyback of the 9th, states that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited to it to the state or prohibited by it to the state are reserved to the states respectfully and for the people. And I know that we're going to have to probably give them about, 4 hours of that, Q, to really solidify and then bring in case law. And
we understand it, you know.
Yeah. And you have to almost absorb it to the point where you feel it like the force. You invoke it when you need it. When you don't need it, just do what you do. Getting in and getting out. Very, very, very important. And by the way, folks, child support children are older now, okay, about jurisdiction. Here we go. Can we go to 412Q? I'm going to go to 412. Bro Perfect. Oh, out of Pittsburgh, what's your question about jurisdiction?
Okay, you know what? I had to ask a question. Oh, the name is The Perfect Black.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I misread it. It is in there like that. I'm sorry, Perfect Black.
That's cool. The question I wanted to ask, I do believe it's with subject matter, and I wanted to know exactly, when they say the state of, blah, 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 is that the landmass or is it the corporation? Because when they said the state of so-and-so versus you, so is it the landmass or is it the corporation that they're speaking about?
Now, don't you think that is the question that you should pose to them when you're in there?
Well, I have an ideal that it's the corporation, it's not the geographical landmass. Because the next question would be is that, you know, they bring up these state codes.
Wait a minute, before you move forward, I asked you, don't you think that is a question that you should pose to whomever has taken that position against you? You didn't answer that.
Oh, definitely. It should be a declaratory judgment, so you should find out exactly the corporation or is the landmass.
Okay.
And I need to be questioned before we move on. If I'm dragged into their public forum.
Right, but would you need to even presume when you can get a direct answer?
Okay.
Because I don't know what someone else is thinking are moving to do when they're bringing in an issue against you. Now, if you said, if Greg brings a issue against the Perfect Black, then that question I could answer that question better because I'm a party of interest in the issue. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just saying if we narrow our
thinking,
we're saying, okay, if I want to know what Q's favorite color is, I just ask Q, what is your favorite color? And then there's no more need for speculation. And from that point forward, the way that you address the matter can be more narrowly tailored to help you achieve your remedy. And I'm not being facetious or funny or truculent with it. I'm just saying, think if in general, people, instead of assuming, just not move until they know what they want, I believe we could probably move in a more direct and beneficial path. are on a more direct and beneficial path toward the remedy.
Well, Greg, let me ask you this, and maybe I need to rephrase the question. Okay, if you get a traffic ticket or you get something from child support, it's always the state of versus the individual, okay? Now, is that state of the landmass or is it the corporation?
Okay, this
and that is, you know, the question that needs to be answered, because if it's the corporation and it's not a government, you know, then we have some other issues. Because then, you know, when a corporation is asking you for money, then a demand for payment, then, you know, under the Clearfield Doctrine, then they need some sort of contract.
Okay.
You know, if they're coming as a corporation.
We're going to try this again.
Okay, come on.
In the state of Florida, that's not the way the document sent to me came. Now, relative to your question, I think I would say, Judge Q, that has been asked and answered.
Okay.
Now, when I say asked and answered, I would say ask the party presenting the document for that clarity. Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Q, am I okay by telling them that? Didn't I ask that question in my first court cases? Well, the state of Florida didn't bring me in here. Didn't I say that, Q? I said,
yep,
state
I
of Florida.
Remember hearing that.
The state of Florida is a piece of paper up in Tallahassee. That's Constitution 101. So I need to know, and I said pursuant to Article 1, Section 16, upon demand, I need to know the nature and causation of the charge. And I just kept on moving through it. But I already know the question is now on the board because I've already dismissed it. But they know that I know. That damn state didn't bring me in there. 16,400,000 people didn't bring me in there. So
I say perfect back to kind of answer the question even a little bit more plainly. It's the corporation. It's not the people of the state of Pennsylvania that's bringing the charge.
Okay. Now let me. Okay.
If you're
all that being said,
I believe is bringing you in. He asked me who it is. And I would say, well, ask them for the clarity. We all know that it's the piece of – they're using the piece of paper up that's up in – is in Philadelphia, the capital of Pennsylvania? Or Chester? What's the capital of Pennsylvania?
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, okay. As well as the capital of the republic. But Philadelphia – and Philadelphia is where the piece of paper is that created that place. But you know it's not that, but you want to ask them to answer that. That would actually be a part of discovery, isn't it?
Okay, well, with all that being said, we all know it's a corporation, okay, and they're never really going to want to admit that, okay? But being though it is a corporation, then from my understanding and my study, and that it's really not part of the state. You know, it's a subdivision of the District of Columbia. It's a franchise of the District of Columbia. So when they usually bring you in and they say the state hub versus, you know, yourself, it's basically a subdivision or a franchise of the District of Columbia. And, you know, they're masquerading as governments and when they're not. And I think that, you know, we need to understand the rules are in different lanes when you're dealing with a government and when you're dealing with a corporation. And from what I've been studying, you know, if it's a corporation, you know, you need to have some sort of contract which binds you to their authority in these codes. And that contract would be a maritime contract. And, you know, that would be the nature and cause from what I was studying is admiralty in this maritime contract. And I'll never ever admit that. So I'm just asking for some sort of, you know, remedy when you deal with these corporations masquerading in government to, you know, really get your remedy. That's basically, you know, what I'm looking for some information on. I mean, do the best you can because I guess I'm asking a lot.
Well, one, you made a statement. You said you wanted to ask me a question. You asked the question
And I answered that you should ask whomever is presenting or posing, who presented the document to you, for it within the clarity, for the clarity. Now, then you gave me what you studied. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, well, this is what they're doing. And you've moved forward. You, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you move forward without having made somebody, I'm guessing, who's posed, who's presented some document to you, answer that question. See, I don't have to speculate once I've asked. And
okay, Greg, here's what I'm running into. Like,
there
when
we
you
go.
Pose these questions.
There we go.
When you pose these questions, they never respond back.
When
because
I pose
they
them,
never,
or when you pose them.
When I pose them, or most of the people who has this information, they never respond back. So, you know, the next move is when they don't respond back, whether it be, you know, an affidavit or a declaration. You know, declaration, you know, only a man can make a declaration, affidavit, from what I'm looking at, all, you know, dealing with corporations and stuff like that there. So when you make your declaration and you're asking for some sort of clarity as to who they are, and how are you subject to them, how they have authority and power over you, they never respond back.
Okay, let's try this.
I bet you could say, though, Perfect Black, I think it's probably the way that you're putting the question, and you're probably not putting it in the same context that if Greg was, you know, in front of the judge the way you would put that one, you know, if he's raising a particular question. I know for myself, I would not move on until the questions that I asked are answered.
Great job,
okay.
With you.
Okay.
And one thing is, we can't be so anxious, if I may give you a, I don't want to call it advice because I know Big Brother's listening. If I could give you, if I could just say this, you can't be so anxious to finish the race that you don't start the race properly. That's where slips come in. That's where falls come in. That's where missteps come in, or timing gets off. And one thing, we don't want to use words that are so all-inclusive, like they never, and I know that they don't, or they won't put it in front of them. Because if they won't, then you can ask the question, why didn't? If they don't, you can say that, well, you can't use that. But again, we can't be so quick to want to run out and say, well, I'm ready to make this response when they say this. And I don't know how much time we now have, how this works. But and again, I believe Q is more than accurate. When it, these are things that are going to have to be discussed, because questions and answers are important. Presentation is important. And being able to focus, because, see, I'm not very smart. That's why I move slowly. And if I'm not satisfied, I just won't move. They can't move without you, right? People think they can. Well, maybe you just acquiesce and let them do what they do and don't stop them. Objections can be made on the record. And also you can file different notices to the court for clarity. And don't forget, the maxims of law never go anywhere. But, again, if you want to ask me, you know, Greg, have you ever sent a letter or you ever inquired as to who it is that's asking you for the debt? I could then say, well, yes. And so when I finally got documents that stated that we're no longer enforcing the action, I didn't need to ask any more questions other than to say in my mind, I knew I was going to beat you motherfuckers anyway.
All right. Let me be a little clear. Because what I'm saying is a lot of times, not on, like, through the administrative process, say, like, a debt collector sends you something saying, you owe me this. And most of the time, when I send them a response back, they never answer back, or they'll send me, you know, a printout of something that doesn't pertain to what I've asked them, you know. So As far as, like, the court stuff, I wasn't speaking on that. I probably wasn't clear enough when I was explaining it to
at
you.
All.
Yeah, so I probably wasn't that's, clear enough. But.
That's what we're here to do, to help, instruct, and guide. Or that's what my attempt is, to help people, one, narrow each question. Maybe that would be better for me to say it that way. Narrow each and every question that you ask. Don't make the question so broad that a broad answer may actually give the appearance of answering. A broad response may give the appearance of an answer. If I ask you when's your birthday, you shouldn't give me anything but your birth date. That's it. Because when you start...
One verb, one subject.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. I got other calls.
Answer my question. I appreciate it.
Well, hold on real quick. I think Brother Khalifa wanted to add on to this point real quick. Let's bring him in and let's see about him adding on to the point that we were making. Brother Khalifa, you there, brother?
Oh, what's going on, Lee?
Peace to the God.
Peace to God.
How y'all doing, bro?
Now, Brother Khalifa,
yes,
another contact point for Greg Dahl's documents, and he kind of helps to organize my schedule, so to speak. So relative to the brothers who wanted to know more about seminars or how to get in contact or do things, you can go to Greg Dawson. I got to add his contact information, but he's the one to ask on when it comes to accessing me locally for some of these things. But go ahead on, Leaf. What's up, man?
Yeah, I was calling, man, because the brother had a great question, and he was asking about is it the corporation or is it the land that they're talking about? Well, the first thing, listening to the audio that you was playing, the first thing we need to even be talking about is standing.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the dictionary, and the dictionary talked about standing. It says status with respect to rank, reputation, or position in society, or a profession. So if we didn't clear up what our standing is, then we shouldn't even be talking about the corporation or the land or anything else, because that's the first issue. And then let me look at the third sense of the word. It says the right or capacity to initiate a suit.
Period.
Do you even have the right to be in there initiating this suit anyway? You got to clear all that up before we move anywhere else.
Can I help you one more time with that since you brought it up, Leaf? And this is what we'll be going into more detail if you're actually in front of us. See, a party has standing when he or she has a sufficient stake in the justiciable controversy. Sierra Club versus Morton, 405 U.S. 727-731. To establish standing, it must be shown that the party suffered injury in fact, economic or otherwise, for which relief is likely to be addressed. See Worth versus Selden, 422 U.S. 490-501. And by the way, people, it may not be abstract, conjectural, or hypothetical. That's Allen versus Wright and Pettigar versus Cosmides, and those are both U.S. holdings. When you narrow it and you don't move, you make it be established. And that was actually free. Y'all can thank Brother Q for that. And I hope that may have gave them a little more clarity with regard to certain questions. We're so quick to want to move on that we don't take care of the businesses. You can't go to stage three until you take care of your business on stage one and two. And that's it. So hold on, Khalifa. I'm going to let you hang on. Brother Tony in Tampa. Kids are older. What's going on, Tony? The kids are older now.
What's up, brother? How you doing?
I'm outstanding. And yourself?
Okay, man. I had a quick question I wanted to shoot at you. I'm actually sitting here multitasking. I'm listening to yourself on the webinar, and I'm actually listening to the program. So I almost got confused. I didn't hear you when you called me.
Hey, brother, how's that webinar? Is it worth it?
Yeah. It's definitely worth it, man. It's finding out about right now. He's just going over, you know, some of the credit bills.
Those of you that are listening right now that went with the free option
We love you. We appreciate you for tuning in to Greg Doss. But it's $25. Is that right, Brother Tony?
Yeah.
$25 you need to donate and pick up the webinar. It's going to be recorded. We can still take care of you. The information on business credit and the CPN, this is information you need. And I know people that are buying stuff with their CPN. They buy so many vehicles. They have friends of theirs that have taken over those responsibilities on these vehicles, and they're going in, they're driving nice, they're doing what they need to do. So I'm not saying to overexert yourself, but if you want further information of how the CPN works with your business credit, how the CPN could be a good foundation for you to go ahead and build and start to lend responsibly, okay, and not use your social, you want to pick up this webinar. Am I right?
Man, I got to have that. I got to have that.
Definitely. We're gonna get it together.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
All right. So my question, Mr. Doss, is basically I was married for 13 years, okay? And so with my ex-wife, I had two children. All right. So we got divorced, and I was starting to pay child support. So initially, in the beginning of it, I failed to make a few payments. You know, had I known then what I know now, I wouldn't have fell for it at all. But back then, you know, it was a different story. So I started to make some child support payments, but initially I fell behind a couple thousand. But once I got on track, you know, I paid continuously, consistently, all the way up until my children were grown. And so now what has happened is the now that they're grown, the what is it? It's called the
arrears.
Florida disbursement unit. Yeah, I'm in the arrears, and you know I'm doing the credit restoration with Will. You probably know Will Kimber, the AKA Credit Man. Been knowing him for a long time, so I'm doing the credit restoration with him. But these people here send me a voucher every month saying that you owe $3,000. Your monthly payment is $65. I hadn't paid them in about a year and a half or so. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, at some point, because this is what they would usually do when I was paying child support, is they would threaten to suspend your license and, you know, the whole nine. But since they've been sending this, I haven't been getting any of those threatening letters about my license suspension. And as I get my credit report back from Will, I see that, okay, it's always saying paying as agreed. So I'm confused, but I'm trying to get a little insight because I'm wondering, okay, what might be my remedy or what might be my course of action if they come at me and say, well, hey, listen, we intend to suspend your license because you haven't been paying on this account.
Okay. That's quite a bit as well. And I know one thing I'm going to really work on is having people narrow the questions. One, no debt can be incurred without a consumer transaction.
Wow, that's a really good point.
So ask them to prove the consumer transaction.
Okay, all right.
And two, don't speculate on what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
Find out for sure.
Now, look, this is what I want you to understand, Brother Tony, is, and you know, all of us at High Frequency understand this, the entire system is built on fear tactics.
Yes.
It's not that you actually are going to have any issue. It's the fear of an issue. Does that make sense? So the fact of the matter is that they've moved you to go ahead and comply based on a fear of a loss of something.
That's great.
And what really is a driver's license?
I'm sorry?
I said, what is a driver's license?
It's just a permit, a permission to drive.
No, it's not. It's an excise tax.
You need the permission of a department. Now, I live in California. It's the Department of Motor Vehicles. Do I need the permission of a department to travel?
Mm-mm.
You see,
in
so
commerce,
the fear is that
commerce,
this department is going to comply with their request, which may come from the state, right, to suspend your license based on you being behind or being in arrears on a debt that there wasn't any actual exchange.
It's like this, and again, I want to say this again, and I love the listeners, and I love your engagement. Stop